Kvod HaRabbanim. Thank you for taking time to participate in this webinar. I hope it's not only because your wives made you do it. My name is Meira Davis, and I am the happy and proud wife of Rabbi Eddie Davis. I was raised in Boston, Mass., graduated from Maimonides School, and then from Stern College, including a year in Israel. After my husband and I were married, he received smicha from Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal, and we moved to Richmond, Virginia, where we served as rabbi and rebbetzin for 9 years. We are now in our 30th year at the Young Israel of Hollywood, Fort Lauderdale in Florida, where we have raised our 9 Kanina Hora children. Several years ago, Yeshiva University's Center for the Jewish Future hired me to do rebbetzin programming, as Naftali just mentioned, and to serve as a resource for rebbetzins. It is a most rewarding position, as I am able to connect with rebbetzins from all over the United States and Canada. We even have one in Hong Kong, and rebbetzins-to-be as well, here with the Smicha program at YU and from the Grus program in Eretz Yisrael. An added benefit is working with the dedicated professionals at CJF. Two of them, Rabbi Levi Mostovsky and Rabbi Naftali Lavender, suggested this webinar. I hope I'm still thanking them for this opportunity after this session is over. Rabbi Lavender has guided me in this new technological experience, and I thank him for his endless patience and help. A number of years ago, a local day school in our area ran a parenting program based on an excellent book, which I highly recommend, Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, subtitled Powerful Lessons in Personal Change. I remember the comments made at that time in the administration. The comments were, the parents who really needed this program didn't come. It was the great parents, those parents interested in further improvement, who attended. And I think perhaps something of the same thing is happening here, that I'm really preaching to the choir, or actually to the preachers themselves. Now to the subject. What every rebbetzin wants her husband to know, but wants someone else to tell him. This was subtitled in the PR as a rebbetzin's wish list for her husband to help him understand her needs and desires for herself, their relationship, their family, and their community. I can tell you what my husband thinks about my wish list. He's not crazy about them. I have a to-do list, and he claims that when he gets a few of the items taken care of, he comes to cross them off the list, and lo and behold, I have added on 6 more items. Anyway, when this topic was chosen, I emailed the almost 200 rebbetzins on my listserv with whom I'm in contact every week, and I wrote them, ladies, this is your chance to speak up. What would you like me to say to the rabbis? I received many replies and suggestions, most of which I will share in this presentation. Many of these issues are addressed at the main program that I am involved with, the annual 2-day Rebbetzin's Yarche Kala in Teaneck, New Jersey, which is geared for newer and younger rebbetzins. 75 rebbetzins attended this past year from all over the United States and Canada, including the one from Hong Kong. I, at this point, want to gratefully acknowledge my mentor, Dr. David Pelkovitz, for allowing me to draw upon the wisdom he has shared over the years in many sessions with the rebbetzins at the Yarche Kala. I'm now going to move on to the first slide, and I want to mention, if anyone has any questions, there's a chat box that you can send me questions in. Hopefully I'll get to look at them. Okay, many rabbi rebbetzin challenges are normal manifestations of the difference in how men and women perceive the same situation or event. I remember a story that describes this very well. And if you've heard it, just bear with me, please. Roger meets Elaine and asks her out to a movie. They have a pretty good time. They continue to see each other regularly and pretty soon are dating each other exclusively. One evening, when they're driving in the car, Elaine says, Do you realize that we've been seeing each other for exactly 6 months? There is silence in the car. To Elaine, it seems like a very loud silence. Elaine thinks, I wonder if it bothers him that I said that. Maybe he's been feeling confined by our relationship, or thinks I'm trying to push him into some kind of obligation he doesn't want. And Roger is thinking, 6 months? Elaine is thinking, hey, I'm not so sure I want this kind of relationship either. Where are we going? Are we heading towards marriage? Am I ready for that level of commitment? Roger's thinking, so that means, let's see, it was February when we started going out, which was right after I had the car at the dealer's, which means, whoa, I'm overdue for an oil change here. Elaine's thinking, he's upset. I can see it on his face. Maybe I'm reading this wrong. Maybe he wants more from my relationship. Yes, he's reluctant to say anything about his own feelings. He's afraid of being rejected. Roger is thinking, and I'm going to look at that transmission again. I don't care what those morons say. It's still not shifting right, and I paid those incompetent thieves $600. Elaine thinks, he's angry. I feel guilty putting him through this, but I'm not sure how I feel. Roger, those morons will probably say it's only a 90-day warranty. Elaine, maybe I'm a little too idealistic, waiting for a knight to come riding up on his white horse while I'm sitting right next to a perfectly good person who... And Roger thinks, warranty, I'll give them a warranty. Roger, Elaine says aloud. What? Roger says, startled. Please don't torture yourself like this, she says, her eyes filling with tears. Maybe I should never have... What? Says Roger. I'm such a fool, Elaine sobs. I know there's no knight and no horse. There's no horse, says Roger. You think I'm a fool, don't you, Elaine says. No, says Roger, glad to finally know the correct answer. It's just that I need some time, Elaine says. There is a 15-second pause while Roger, thinking as fast as he can, tries to come up with a safe response. Yes, he says. Thank you, Roger, says Elaine. Thank you, says Roger. Roger takes Elaine home, where she sits down, a conflicted and tortured soul, and calls her best friend, and in painstaking detail, they talk about this situation for 3 hours straight. For the next few weeks, they will analyze everything she said and everything he said, exploring every word and gesture for nuances of meaning, never reaching any definite conclusions, but never getting bored with it either. Roger goes home, turns on the TV, and immediately becomes deeply involved in a rerun of a tennis match between two Czechoslovakians he never heard of. A tiny voice in the far recesses of his mind tells him that something major was going on back there in the car, but he is pretty sure there is no way he would ever understand what. So he figures it's better if he just doesn't think about it. It's a joke, but there's more than a kernel of reality here. Rabbis and rebbitzins need to handle the standard differences in style between men and women. Plus, a rabbinic couple has additional challenges which impact on personal and professional life, including living in the fishbowl and unrealistic expectations of the community for the rabbi, for the rebbitzin, and for their family. The rabbi and his family are more visible and vulnerable than most other families. They are subject to constant scrutiny, criticism, and often economic insecurity, and sometimes moving around a lot too. This is true. Nevertheless, even though the rabbinate has certain challenges, the grass is not always greener in the other fellow's yard. Many other careers have their own challenges as well. Next slide. Reflecting back on the topic, why can't the rebbitzin tell the rabbi herself? I'm getting better at this technology here. She knows he doesn't want to hear it. The Alenu Marital Survey, conducted by the OU a few years ago, had over 3,600 Jewish respondents, and the results found that more than 80% of the time, it's the wife who brings up sticky marital issues while the husband avoids discussion. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Maybe she tells him, but he doesn't get it. They have different styles of communication. Often women hint at what they are trying to convey and expect or hope that their husbands will know what they mean. Okay, one more joke. A man was riding his Harley motorcycle along a California beach when suddenly the sky clouded above his head, and in a booming voice the Lord said, "Because you have tried to be faithful to me in all ways, I will grant you one wish." The biker pulled over and said, "Build a bridge to Hawaii so I can ride over any time I want." The Lord responded, "That request is materialistic. Think of the enormous challenges for that kind of undertaking. The supports required to reach the bottom of the Pacific and the concrete and steel it would take. It will nearly exhaust several natural resources. I can do it, but it is hard for me to justify your desire for worldly things. Take a little more time and think of something that could possibly help mankind." The biker thought about it for a long time. Finally, he said, "Lord, I wish that I and all men could understand our wives. I want to know how she feels inside, what she's thinking when she gives me the silent treatment, why she cries, what she means when she says nothing's wrong, and how I can make a woman truly happy." The Lord replied, "You want two or four lanes on that bridge." My husband has a great sense of humor and has certainly pegged me well. I am a woman from Venus, the wife who wants to talk about everything, especially improving myself and himself and our family. He is a man from Mars. He would rather watch the Czechoslovakian tennis match. One Hanukkah, he gave me the book, "Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus." I'll deny that I would not make him read it. But we have come to our own pshara in this area. I read self-help books on relationships and health, and I give him the Rashi Prakim of the Tachlitic recommendations. No Perish Rashi, just what to do. It works very well for us. He acknowledges my need to read this material, and I respect his desire not to read it. But we share the bottom line. What changes do we need to make to be better and healthier spouses, parents, and people? Another reason perhaps why she can't tell him is because it's more effective if it's heard from an objective party. Let me ask you, Rabbanim, how often are you requested by a female congregant to speak to her husband because he'll listen if you tell him? He won't listen to me, but he'll listen if you tell him. Another possibility, the couple does not have good communication skills. If they need someone to facilitate their conversations, they should go for help with their relationship. A New Jersey couple who has been married for 25 years shared the following advice in an insightful letter written to Dear Abby in the newspaper. Here is an excerpt. "Dear Abby, we feel that there is a misconception about going to counseling, that it is a sign that a marriage is failing. We ourselves have benefited from counseling several times. We are both strong-willed people who sometimes have trouble getting past things that bother us, including dreams and goals that conflict with each other. The way we express ourselves can sometimes be detrimental too. While we can work through most of these disagreements, we have found outside counsel very helpful at times. We also recommend that engaged couples seek counseling before they marry. We wish we had been given real counseling at that point in our lives. There were hidden issues that an experienced counselor could have pointed out to us: our different philosophies about handling money, raising children, relationships with extended family, career, etc. That was from Wendy and Bill in Walk Rockaway, New Jersey. And I would add, a marriage is like a road under construction with ups and downs. And incidentally, I do recommend to couples before they get married, if I feel there's anything that I sense, that they should go for some counseling in advance. A marriage is like a road under construction with ups and downs. It requires work by both individuals in order for it to grow. There is no shame in reaching out for guidance when needed, and no sense in waiting until things are out of control. Numerous Rebbetzins have strongly urged me to emphasize, whenever I have the opportunity, that sometimes even rabbinic couples need to go for counseling. They could go to a rabbi, and if that's not a viable option, they need to take special care, of course, in choosing a counselor. Another reason a woman may be hesitant in speaking to her husband: It's well accepted that the rabbi looks better to the community if his Rebbetzin does a great job for the community. This pressure to perform might make the Rebbetzin reluctant to discuss her true needs with her husband for fear of letting him down. Maybe she's not really into it. And chas v'shalom, the fear of him impacting negatively on his career by her not being what he would like her to be or what the community expects. A Rebbetzin may become defensive and skirt around the core issue, which is being caught between her own needs and those of her spouse. The ultimate goal is for the rabbi and Rebbetzin to tell each other what they need. There's nothing wrong with consciousness raising by professionals. But if a wife needs someone else to tell her husband something, it may also indicate that the husband is not considering his wife's individual needs respectfully and seriously. Or she may feel that there's something wrong with her, that she has particular needs. The bottom line, even though there are definitely unique considerations in rabbi-rebbetzin relationships, there are limited differences between rabbis and rebbetzins as compared to non-rabbinic husbands and wives. Each couple and situation requires their own conversation. After taking in everyone's issues and problems, who does the rabbi turn to with his problem? His wife. Many wives are able to lend a willing ear with empathy and understanding to the issues, problems, and stresses that their husbands have dealt with in the course of their day or week. Couples who can share their stresses strengthen their understanding of each other and strengthen their bonds with each other. However, a rabbi does need to evaluate what he can and should share with his wife, both in terms of confidentiality and also in terms of what his wife can bear to hear. One Rebbetzin wrote me that she does not want to hear about the shul all day long. When she comes home from work, she wants a break from work and from shul. Another Rebbetzin wrote, and I quote, "I know that my husband takes in everyone's issues and challenges, but has no one to talk to but me. It doesn't seem healthy not to have people he can turn to with his problems. I am encouraging him to see someone." And yet another Rebbetzin wrote, quote, I would tell the rabbis that they do not necessarily need to share with their wives all the bad stuff and times when they are mistreated by Balabatim. It's better to find an outside confidant who does not have the same emotional attachment as we do. When a wife hears that her spouse was mistreated, she writes, it's enraging, perhaps even more so than if the same thing had happened to her. Rebbetzin writes, same Rebbetzin writes, when my husband was being given a very hard time in his shul, it would have been much easier on me and on our marriage if he had had someone else, someone other than me or in addition to me to speak to about it. How can you think clearly when your head is whirring with rage as well as anxiety for the future of your husband's position? My husband knows better now, and he doesn't share some things with me, and we are both happier for it. Another option, a confidant. A confidant needs to be carefully chosen, a safe and trustworthy person to share with, even by phone. And last, a therapist. In small towns, especially, the rabbi often has no friends. Everyone is a congregant or potential congregant. There's no shame in going for professional assistance, big town or little town. A good therapist can teach valuable coping mechanisms to deal with current issues and keep new ones from building up and getting out of control. A therapist, as an aside, it's very important for every rabbi to have a therapist or counselor in his community who he can turn to with for advice in handling certain situations. Part of his Rolodex of people to be able to contact. Next slide is about confidentiality. At the recent Rebbetzin's Yarchei Kala, the following scenario was presented by Dr. David Pelkovitz at a session entitled The Private and Public Lives of the Rabbinic Couple. I will mention that the scenario was put together by the Rebbetzins. This is the scenario. A Rebbetzin was standing at the Shul Kiddush on Shabbat morning with her 5-year-old son and 8-year-old daughter. She was approached by a female congregant who proceeded to berate her regarding the Rebbetzin's lack of caring and interest relating to a recent illness in the congregant's family. The woman's voice rose with anger. A crowd gathered, and it became a vociferous broadcast of the woman's unmet expectations of the Rebbetzin. Several members attempted to calm down the upset woman and stop the attack. By the time the rabbi arrived after being called to the scene, the crowd had dispersed and the children were taken to an older sibling. The Rebbetzin described the scene that had just transpired. The rabbi acknowledged that he knew about the illness, but was unaware that he was expected to mention it to his wife. Dr. Pelkovitz addressed many of the issues raised in the scenario. The Rebbetzins then met in breakout groups to discuss this issue, to discuss these issues. Yes, women like to do that. They were directed to create a brief PowerPoint summary, a synthesis of their little group's views and recommendations, basically a takeaway message. Then a representative of each little group, breakout group, shared their suggestions with the entire group of women. It was an enthusiastic, educational, and rewarding session. It touched on the wife's feelings about unfair expectations placed upon her, especially if she didn't sign up to be a Rebbetzin initially, another topic. The main take-home point for rabbis in a situation like this is to remember to request permission to share information with your wife in this kind of a situation if it is appropriate. A Rebbetzin can be a tremendous asset to her husband in certain situations when she is in the know. Late last night, I received the final email from a Rebbetzin on what to include in this presentation. She wrote, "A Rebbetzin often understands unspoken social expectations and feelings more than a rabbi might pick up on, especially if it's relating to female congregants. Perhaps," she suggests, "rabbis should more readily welcome and seek out extra insight in minor and major details of shul happenings, programming, and politics from their wives." A wife is described in the Torah as an ezer kenegdo, a helpmate in opposition, which is a very enigmatic phrase because either she is a help to her husband or she stands in opposition to her husband. Rashi's approach is to describe the relationship as taking both positions. Sometimes she's helpful, and sometimes she's criticizing. My husband suggests that an acceptable interpretation of this phrase is that the wife is always helpful to her husband. However, in order for her to offer a constructive suggestion, it appears as if she is in opposition to him. It's a wise and loving wife who was adept in offering criticism to her husband in a special fashion, as if she is in opposition to him. It's a gift to be able to offer criticism with the proper words, decibel level, and tenderness so that the husband will receive her words and appreciate the fact that she is a helpmate at all times. As a rabbi, my husband frequently believes that he is working in a vacuum. He tells me how much he appreciates that I offer my input and suggestions on his work, on his Divrei Torah, his oratory, and his effectiveness in his role as a rabbi of the congregation. And now we move on to a real big topic for Rebbetzins especially to talk about. Time and boundaries. This slide is another scenario from the Rebbetzin's Yarchei Kala from the session which was presented by Rabbi J.J. Schachter and Mrs. Yocheved Schachter. The session was entitled The Rabbi-Rebbetzin Dynamic, Balancing Expectations of the Rebbetzin. It's the first Sunday following Simchas Torah. For the last several months, you and your family had been planning to devote this day to a special bonding experience to make up for all the time you spend preoccupied with work and community over the Yom Tovim. What happens? First, Mr. Goodman, an 80-year-old parent of a longtime member of the shul, died, and the funeral is scheduled for noon that same Sunday. Then David, a young man in the shul, got engaged last night, and the vort is scheduled for Sunday afternoon. And to top it off, you received a call late Motzei Shabbos from a woman whose husband just found out that he has cancer. The format for this session was the same as with Dr. Pelkovitz's session. Breakout groups to discuss the questions for the Rebbetzins, which I will now put up underneath. I changed them for rabbis. And after discussing these issues, the small groups presented to the larger group. There were numerous ideas presented as to how to handle this situation. It required every woman to deal with her own priorities and then to consider those of her husband and their children. So after you read the scenario, what do you think and feel about these dilemmas? Does your wife feel the same way you do? Do you know if she feels the same way you do? What about your children? How do you process everyone's feelings and address this issue? Oops. There we go. A practical guide to rabbinic counseling. A book put together by Dr. Yisrael Levitz and Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, published by Feldheim. Dr. Levitz also published an article in Tradition years ago, and I pulled out some of the information from his findings. The name of the article he wrote in Tradition was Children of Rabbis. He based his results on the in-depth interviews with 40 adult children of rabbis, 22 Orthodox, 13 conservative, and 5 Reform. His findings indicated that the rabbi's lack of time for himself and his family is a serious problem. The rabbinate tends to encircle the life of the family to the point that he has time neither for himself nor his family. The rabbi, and I don't have to tell rabbis who are listening to it, because you know that the rabbi can get totally sucked in to serving his congregants. His time can be totally taken in if he allows it. Ein ladavar sof. You could do it more than 24 hours a day if there were more than 24 hours a day. Unless the rabbi establishes a system, such as a day off or other forms of boundaries, he will have no time left for the other true priorities in his life. 70% of divorced clergymen, reports Dr. Levitz, report that the primary complaint of their wives was the inordinate amount of time demanded by their careers. How sad that the marriage and family were sacrificed because the rabbi did not have enough time for them. Dr. Levitz's recommendations. Give children an active role so that they are perceived as in it together as a family. I remember the earlier years of our rabbinic experience. Post Yom Kippur, my husband would pick up lulavim and etrogim for all who had ordered them in our little shul at that time. He and our sons would spend a few hours setting up each lulav with the hadassim and aravot and learning how to make that little basket thing. It was great bonding time for them, as well as an educational and fun experience. And they were with him. If kids are kept in the loop of changes in plans, and if their feelings are heard and validated, we tend sometimes not to listen to our kids, how important it is to respect their feelings also. And if their feelings are not lightly disregarded, it helps the children to understand and accept these changes more easily. Properly handled, it can also sensitize our children to the needs of others. For instance, Abba is going to visit a family that has a sick girl. Would you like to make a card for her and cheer her up? I'm sure you would appreciate it if roles were reversed. It's preferable for the locus of stress to be perceived as coming from outside rather than inside the family. So if Tati, Abba, Daddy, is missing your Hanukkah play, it can be explained to the child he's missing your Hanukkah play because someone in the shul died and he has to go and help them and do the funeral, rather than he just can't come. More suggestions from Dr. Levitz. Carve out space to be a parent outside of the rabbinic role. Be sure you do participate in some of the activities of your children, be it sports or Hanukkah play or sitter presentation, whatever it is. Get involved in some way so they see you as their parent and not just as the rabbi. And finally, a strong marriage is the ultimate buffer. Rather than seeing a father as totally over-involved with the shul and a mother almost single-handedly taking care of the children, seeing a strong marriage and a great relationship between the parents is an ultimate buffer. And if you have no children yet, then that still is the best buffer. The parents are seen as trying to support each other, and that's wonderful for the children. Okay, now you're going to get fairly unadulterated responses from the Rebbetzins. When I sent them that email asking them what they would like me to say, these are some of the responses. The children and I need to feel like we have 100% of your attention for regular chunks of time. Even when you're home, you're checking your email, BlackBerry, on the phone with congregants. I remember reading in The Parenting Path, a book by Dr. Pelkovitz, where he emphasizes how important it is to let your child know that he's getting your complete attention, and this works for wives just as well. He says, don't answer a phone or allow yourself to be disturbed. When you do that, it shows that you're setting aside the time. You're being mekadesh et hazman, and how much you value the person you are with. Learn with your own children. Spend time with them. Make them a priority, not secondary to communal responsibilities. The Kotzker Rav says, a parent is like an archer. The child is like an arrow. The closer we hold the children to our hearts, the farther they will go. Discuss your entertaining style and schedule for Shabbos guests. Dedicate one meal on Shabbos to just the family, or every other Shabbos, or even once a month, whatever works for you and your wife. One Rebbetzin wrote me the following, and I quote, one rule that I insist on is that we host only one out of the two Shabbos meals, and we do this every 2 weeks. So we have about 10 people every 2 weeks. I often have to explain to my husband that if we did this every week, I would probably burn out. Also, this way we can set some boundaries with the shul. Some Shabbosim are just family time. It can be hard for rabbis to understand this, especially if they are as friendly and outgoing as my husband is and just want to extend an invitation to everyone they meet. It's important to communicate to rabbis how important it is to maintain a sense of balance in this aspect of life, hosting, entertaining, etc. Discuss your goals within the community while setting boundaries and maintaining a sense of balance. Discuss means listen and speak. A balance is moznayim, which has the word ozen in it. We need to listen to find a balance. Keep your children sitting right next to you at the Shabbos table. That was always a lot of fun with us, for us, when our kids were growing up, because we really did have company ourselves for virtually every single meal. And who's going to sit next to Abba? But someone always sat next to Abba. Very important. For many of us, again, this was sent in by Revitson, for many of us, Shabbos and Sunday can be a day of work. However, during the week, you, as the rabbi, usually have more time. Doesn't apply to everyone, I know. Try hard to be home for eating dinner with the family or bath time and homework time. Helping your wife with the kids and household tasks to alleviate her burden should be a priority. Even if it means you need to cut back on some things that you enjoy or feel are more important, such as having a chavrusa with a congregant every night. What do you think are the three most loving words that a wife can hear from her husband? Can I help? Sensitivity to the needs of the Rebbetzin. One more scenario from Rabbi and Mrs. Schechter's session. It's Sunday late morning. You worked hard over Shabbat and want to relax, but all the kids are home and need help with their homework and rides to their various activities. Your wife also worked hard all week, including on Shabbos, when she cared for the kids while you were in shul for minyanim and shiurim, and maybe she even gave a shiur herself. She also prepared the meals and entertained balabatim for lunch on Shabbos. You both need a break. Responses. Well, first of all, how do you address this issue? Responses from the Rebbetzins. We wives know how hard you rabbis work and how stressed out you are, but so are we. So let's figure out a way to de-stress together and give each other the sympathy we both need. An out-of-town Rebbetzin wrote me these thoughts. She wrote, "Don't sign your wife up for anything." She said, "Something that my husband and I discuss frequently is remembering that we are different people with somewhat different goals within the community. He is very enthusiastic and always wants to take on more. I am more cautious and slower to take on additional commitments. I'm still not loving being so far from my family and friends or sharing my husband with a large community. For example, he recently signed me up to spearhead an event that I was not interested in right now. He could not imagine that I would not be as excited as he to be part of this event. I feel very busy, and I'm not looking to take on something else right now." Here's a little frustration coming out. Don't go to every conference, sit on every board, travel out of town to every wedding, every funeral, every shiva, etc. Balance your own time, this rabbi is telling the rabbis. We are lonely. Again, this is more for out-of-town Rebbetzins also. We are lonely. We have no real friends in the community, which means no one to lean on when we need a hug and no one to help us or to stretch to when things are rough. The rabbi needs to be our husband, but also to fill in that void where friendships ought to be. And I know that when my husband and I were in Richmond, Virginia for 9 years, we truly became each other's best friends because we did not have anyone else locally to turn to. And that certainly benefited our marriage very much in the long run, short run and long run. This one was very painful to read. It was written by more than one Rebbetzin. Treat your husband like you treat a congregant from your shul. Give her 100% of your undivided attention as much as you can. Follow through on the needs that your wife expresses. If your wife clearly expresses a need, be sure to respond. Don't just yes, yes her. If she would like to be surprised with flowers at work one day or just wants to have a date night every few weeks, make it happen. It will mean so much to her, and trust me, you'll be happy you did it. You'll benefit. I like this suggestion a lot. When a rabbi is teaching a chatan, ask your wife if there's anything she would like you to add that she thinks a new husband should know. It will sensitize the chatan and also give the rebbetzin a chance to speak about her needs in an indirect way. Indirect way, that's how many women feel most comfortable expressing themselves, especially if it's something she feels her husband doesn't enjoy hearing about. My husband loves when I call him when he's meeting with a chassan. It gives him the opportunity to tell the young man that he should always pick up the phone when his wife calls. My husband feels that some of the most valuable advice he gives to a chassan is, don't ever think you really understand what your wife is thinking. If you do, you're going to be in big trouble. And above all, make your wife happy. Keep her happy. Because if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. What happened? There we go. Conclusion. At the end of the day, talk about how the day went, dealing with stress by turning towards each other. Knowing and being sympathetic to each other's stressors is a unifying building block in a healthy marriage. The famous story of Rabbi Aryeh Levine, who went with his wife with her sore foot to the doctor and said, "Doctor, her foot hurts us," really says it all. Every night for many years already, my husband and I sit together and learn one aliyah of the week's parsha with Rashi. Then we fill each other in on how our day went. We discuss issues we need to attend to, and we plan ahead for our time with our children, community issues, everything. We both look forward to this valuable time together. Even though we communicate with each other a lot in the course of the day, often neither of us has the time to have a full conversation, and we just say, "I'll fill you in tonight, I'll fill you in tonight." And our children, none of whom are home anymore, but when they were very young, they never witnessed this because we did it after they were in bed. But when our children became teenagers, they saw the importance of learning together, and they loved to watch us talking with each other at the end of the day. They knew that that was our special time together. Regularly reevaluate your shared goals and priorities together. Clarity of goals as a couple is critical to moving ahead together. As it says in Mishlei, the Ein Hazon Yipara Am, without a vision, the nation becomes untamed. The Shomer Torah Ashrehu. Hear and respect your wife's expectations of her role as Rebbetzin and express your expectations. Listen and speak. Come to a workable, realistic agreement that you can both accept and honor. A combination of acceptance of your partner and willingness to change is the most effective approach to improving marital communication. Wanting to give to each other. If a husband wants to make his wife happy and she wants to make him happy, they will find a way to do it and both of their needs will be satisfied. And remember, you don't have to think alike. You have to think together. And finally, Hakarat HaTov. Focus on the good and express appreciation on a regular basis. Focus on the positive. A story I usually use when I'm teaching kallahs is the following. A newly married couple, both holding jobs, has divided up their household chores. She washes the laundry, he does the food shopping. He cooks dinner, she washes the dishes. One day, she comes home from work and she needs to do the laundry. She finds herself crawling around on the floor, picking up her husband's shirts and inside-out socks. She starts to seethe What does he think I am, a slave? How dare he treat me like that? She is fuming. I usually do two scenarios. The first scenario concludes with she just keeps on seething, and then the poor slob literally walks in the door and she attacks him. You are such an inconsiderate slob. I can't believe I married you, etc., etc. And then he, of course, with his back against the wall, has the choice of responding in kind and saying, well, it's your job to wash the dishes and you didn't and now we have roaches, and it just escalates and can't always be controlled afterwards. Or if he has a lot of chachma, he will calm down and say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. Let's discuss it when we're both calm. The alternate scenario is when, while she's crawling around on the floor picking up the dirty laundry and seething, she sees their wedding picture on the wall and she remembers what a great guy he is, how he's so loving to her and he has such a great sense of humor and he takes such good care of her. So she pulls herself together and instead of attacking him when he comes home, she's able to greet him b'seva panim yafot and then tells him about the laundry problem using the famous I message. I know you love me, but it makes me feel bad when I have to crawl around gathering up your dirty laundry. Maybe we could put a little basketball hoop over the hamper and you can practice your swishes with your socks. And then he can tell her how sorry he is, he made her feel bad, etc., and even say that he'll never do it again. And Baruch Hashem, a tragedy has been averted. Rabbi Jonathan Rieti, on his tape, A Time to Heal, explains the difference between machlokas and shalom as follows. Machlokas has the root chelek, which means peace. Shalom has the root shalem, which is, of course, the whole. Machlokas comes from focusing on a piece of a person, especially at times of anger. Shalom emanates from seeing a person as a divinely designed whole. Women need to hear that they are appreciated and admired. Expressing appreciation for even the mundane things goes a long way. Even expressing appreciation for attempting to do something. Oh, I really appreciate you tried to make me such a beautiful birthday cake. No, I'm sorry it got burned. The perfect words for a husband to say to his wife are clearly written in the final perek of Sefer Mishlei, which we say or sing every Friday night in Eshet Chayil. Kamu vaneha vaya ashuha, ba'ala vaya halala. Her husband praises her, and what does he say? Rabot banot asu chayil va'at alit al kulana. You are the best. One Rebbetzin, after venting, concluded her email with the following message to rabbis. She wrote, we respect and admire you. We love you and are here on the journey with you. Even with all the craziness, this is the life we've chosen to be in, and we're happy, even if we don't always show it. I pray that Hashem gives us all the chachma and koach, and to the wives, the bina yetera, to cultivate our relationships with our spouses to the highest level, with ample and continual and daily verbal and otherwise expressions of hakarat hatov, thereby giving the next generation and giving our children the most valuable gift that is in our power to grant them, a real, live, beautiful model of how to have a healthy, respectful, fulfilling, and loving relationship. Truly, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha at its very best. And it doesn't hurt the balabatim to see this either. Thank you very much. I would be happy to take any questions that you may have or any comments that you would like to share. No comments, no questions. Then I will say thank you very much.